So the title of my talk is Determining the Spin-Orbit Coupling from Spin-Polarized Spectroscopy of Magnetic Impurities. Before actually starting my talk, I would love to cover a couple of things about spin-orbit coupling because not everybody's familiar with the concept. So when electrons make their orbital motion in atoms, they actually create some effective magnetic fields, and the spins of electrons start to talk to this magnetic field. And this is what creates the spin-orbit coupling. And it can be written this way, where we have the constant lambda, which is called the spin-orbit coupling constant. So as we know, this effect manifests in atoms in two ways. First of all, we have some shifts in the spectral lines, and second of all, we have some splitting in the spectral lines, which is called the fine structure. But today we're not going to talk about separate atoms, but we're going to talk about spin-orbit coupling in solids. So in solids, one of the ways to write the spin-orbit coupling is actually the Rajba effect, Rajba spin-orbit coupling. There are some different ones. For example, there is Dresselhaus spin-orbit coupling, but I'm going to talk about this one. So if you have a two-dimensional system and you have a z-axis which points out of the plane, the spin-orbit term in solids can be written in this way. So again, lambda is the spin-orbit coupling constant. This Rajba effect locks momentum to spin for electrons. And as we know, in solids, the spectrum is p squared over 2m, which is just one parabola. But as soon as the spin-orbit coupling is introduced, the parabola splits, and each of the parabolas corresponds to one of the spins, up or down. Why spin-orbit coupling is so important? Well, it has been playing a key role in topological phenomena recently. So usually when people are working with topological insulators or Majorana fermions, one way or another, they have to deal with the spin-orbit coupling. So it's important. And it's also important if we have some system to know how to measure the spin-orbit coupling. So there are two ways that were mentioned in this article that I give below. The first one is angle-resolved photoemission spectroscopy, ARPES, or it can be either non-spin-resolved or spin-resolved, it doesn't matter. Or sometimes people use magnetotransport measurements. So here on the picture, you can see the band structure, the one that I showed you on the previous slide. Here it's vice versa, but reversed, but it doesn't matter. So you can see the two parabolas and the splitting caused by spin-orbit coupling. So this brings me to the outline of my talk. In the introduction, I would love to speak about the Friedel oscillations, superconductivity, and Schiba states. And then I'll turn to the main part of my talk, which will be about determining the spin-orbit coupling itself and how to do that using magnetic impurities and spin-resolved STM. So first thing I'd like to cover is Friedel oscillations. If we take a metal and introduce an impurity into this metal, what happens is that we observe some oscillations in the local density of states in this metal. We know that the period of these oscillations is given by pi divided by K Fermi. We also know that this phenomenon appears actually in many systems, different dimensionality, different lattice. Like for example, in 2D, you can also have it in graphene, and in different systems, it manifests differently. There are common things. The common things are that, first of all, it can be observed using scanning tunneling microscopy, STM. And the second thing is that all these oscillations can be actually explained using the band structure. So here I plot the dispersion relation in a metal and the Fermi level with the dashed red line. So to understand why actually the oscillations have this 2K Fermi feature, we just need to understand physically how this is happening. So if you have a defect, like for example, an impurity, and you have an electron that comes with momentum K Fermi, and it scatters on this defect, and it's reflected with momentum minus K Fermi, so the resulting momentum is 2K Fermi, and this actually corresponds to standing waves. So that's exactly what's happening, and that's why we're having this 2K Fermi in this cosine. Second thing I wanted to talk about is superconductivity. So as we know, superconductivity is conditioned by Cooper pairs. Cooper pairs, they're just pairs of electrons that can become that undergo Bose condensation, and that leads to superconductivity. So when two electrons form a pair, they can do it actually in different ways, and that's very important. First of all, when a pair forms, there is the spin quantum number, and the spin can be either zero, the full spin of a pair, if the spins are anti-aligned, which we call singlet pair, or it can be triplet if they're aligned. And there's also an orbital quantum number, which is a non-negative integer, which is connected to the relative motion of electrons in a pair. As we know, according to the Pauli principle, the wave function of a pair of electrons, of any fermions, should be anti-symmetric, which gives us actually this condition, and it means that not all the combinations of L and S are possible. Some of them are allowed and some of them are not. So we can distinguish two different possibilities for the wave function. The first one is symmetric orbital part and asymmetric spin part, and vice versa. So I'm not going into details here, but I'm going to say one important thing, that in this talk I'm going to speak about the S wave. So I have a symmetric orbital part and asymmetric spin part, L equals zero and S equals zero as well. And that's what usually people call conventional superconductivity. And that is very well described by BDG Hamiltonian, Bogolyubov-Degen, in Nambu basis that's given here. So here I have electrons with spin up, electrons with spin down, holes with spin down, and holes with spin up. And in this basis, I can write down my Hamiltonian, which takes this kind of form. So this psi p defines the spectrum of free electrons, and delta s is the pairing amplitude. It's also important to notice that this is a Minfield Hamiltonian. This delta s is given in Minfield approximation. And the question is actually, since we have been talking about Friedel oscillations, whether we can have some impurity-induced oscillations in superconductors or we can't. And the answer is yes, we can. And those oscillations have some special name. They're called Shiba states. And what happens is the following. If you take 3D superconductor or 2D superconductor and introduce a localized magnetic impurity, you're going to see some oscillations in the density of states. And the mechanism here is a bit different from what we had for Friedel oscillations, but still the analogy is kind of clear. What happens is that the Cooper pairs, they're, let's say, flying around this impurity that we have in the superconductor. And eventually what happens is that the impurity can break the pair. And when the pair is broken, one of the electrons sticks to the impurity, and the other one, it does not have any other choice but to go to the conduction band, because only pairs can be in the valence band in a superconductor. So a single electron can survive only in the conduction band, and that's how we have some impurity induced bound states in the superconductor. So here on this picture you can see the superconducting gap. This is the density of states, and inside the gap you see a peak, which actually corresponds to this Shiba state. You see that the difference between 3D case and 2D case is that in 2D case, those states and oscillations, they're more extended. They go further in distance. Like here, it can be 10th of nanometers, and here it's just a couple of nanometers in extension. So this has been observed in two works. The one is classical work by Yazdani. It's the 3D case, and the other one has been done recently and published in Nature by Menard et al. So that covers the 2D case. The energies of the Shiba states are given by this very simple expression, where delta S is the superconducting gap and alpha is defined as the dimensionless strength of your impurity that you have in your system. So now we have enough information to go to the main part of the talk.
Sorry, what's the frequency of the oscillations?
The frequency is again connected with K Fermi. So okay. it's the same as we had before for Friedel oscillations. So now we turn to the determining of the spin orbit coupling, and how do we propose to do it using these Shiba states. First of all, I'll cover the model. Again, we use this NAMBU basis, and we write the Hamiltonian for 2D superconductor in XY plane in this form. So the first part of the Hamiltonian corresponds just to the superconductor, and the second part is the spin orbit coupling that I was talking in the beginning. And what we add here is what we need to have some impurity-induced oscillations. We need the impurity itself. So we add an impurity with an impurity spin pointing somewhere. For now, I do not specify where. And since it is localized, it has this delta function in coordinate space, and it has this part that corresponds to the coupling itself. What people have been studying before in the system is non-polarized local density of states. It is the same as I was showing you before for Friedel oscillations. And the question is, can we extract some additional information from the system if we study the spin-polarized local density of states? And the answer is spoiler, yes, but we need to get to that point. I'll just briefly cover the methods that we used analytically and numerically, because I think it's always nice to show how the things are done. So analytically, it's very simple. You just write down your Schrodinger equation with the Hamiltonian that I gave you before. So it has the superconducting part, Rashba spin orbit, and the localized impurity. Then you find your retarded Green's function using the standard definition. And rewriting this Schrodinger equation, making some Fourier transforms, you can bring it to this form. It's a simple form that defines two things. It defines, first of all, the energy levels of your Shiba states. So the formula that I was showing before, it actually comes from this equation. And the second thing that is defined by this equation is the wave function of your Shiba state defined on the impurity. So it's locally on the impurity. But of course, we need to get the oscillations, to get the extension, we need to go further. So we need to find the wave function itself. And for that, we can use the Green's function in coordinate space. And the wave function will be given by this expression. Using this wave function, we can compute both the non-polarized and spin-polarized local density of state, which are given by these standard expressions. There is nothing fancy here. Just the mean value of this operator for this wave function. And how we do it numerically. So numerically, we define a square lattice. On this square lattice, we have the spectrum, which is this given by this expression. Mu is the chemical potential, and T is the Hopping parameter. We set the lattice constant to 1, so it is absent here. And what we do is that we use the T-matrix approximation. The T-matrix allows me to... we approach this problem perturbatively, and T-matrix allows me to actually sum up all the orders in perturbation theory. And since my impurity is localized, T-matrix has only energy dependence and is given by this expression. I don't want to go to details, but if somebody wants to, we can do it later. But the most important thing about this T-matrix is that the poles of T-matrix, they give us the energies of Shiba states. So, and the T-matrix itself can define the perturbed Green's function, which is important because the perturbed Green's function comes into the game when we want to compute the spin polarized quantities that we need. Don't focus on these formulas. I just want to say that the first three lines, they correspond to spin-polarized local density of states in momentum space. And what's important is that they have very special structure, which corresponds to sigma matrices, Pauli matrices in spin space. So here, for example, for X component, we have 1, 2, plus 2, 1, which is natural when we consider sigma X. And here we have, for example, for Y, 1, 2, minus 2, 1. So that's also, the structure is kind of clear. So now what we get using these analytics and the numerics. So the first row corresponds to an impurity which is in plane, and the second row corresponds to an impurity which is out of plane, and the columns correspond to different components of my spin. So here it's SX, SY, and SZ. I'm not going to talk about all of them for one simple reason, is that the features that I have on these pictures, they repeat each other from one picture to another picture. So actually, it is quite sufficient to consider only these two. And
the spin is polarized in the z direction. Impurity spin is in the z direction.
So on this row, the second row, impurity is in z direction, exactly. And the first row, it's in x direction. It doesn't matter. For example, I can take this one, I can take in-plane impurity, and I can take X component and Z component. I will get the same features, it doesn't matter. And so here I give exactly the same pictures that I gave you before. To analyze these features, we need to take a look at actually what we have here. So if you look carefully at these pictures, you can see that we have four different rings at different momenta. And now I'm going to explain, as I have explained for Friedel oscillations, where they're coming from, where this 2K Fermi momentum is coming from, I'm going to explain the same way using the new band structure we have for this system. So first of all, we need to notice that here the band structure is also these two parabolas, as we should have for a spin orbit split system. But the difference is that we have also the superconducting gap. Although we have it, it's not going to actually affect what I'm going to say about these momenta. So you see here this middle ring, which is given by 2mv, and 2mv is given by this distance. If we go to the second arrow that shows me the outer ring on my momentum space picture, it's given by this distance. So these are oscillations between these points. And the third arrow that I have is 2p Fermi plus, and that's the smallest one that I can have here. So that's for in-plane impurity. And the most important one, the out-of-plane impurity, the X component. So again, we have these features that we had before, the outer ring, the p Fermi plus and p Fermi minus. But except for those, we also have a small feature in the middle, which is given by this ring here. And that is defined by this small p lambda. And this is the key point here. So this p lambda is actually directly proportional to spin orbit coupling. There is nothing here else except for this effective mass. And that's very important. So this is what we propose to use to determine the spin orbit coupling. We say that if we manage to get this picture using spin-polarized STM, then we can look at this ring and this middle ring, which in intensity is always higher than the other rings, gives us the spin-orbit coupling. Just to be consistent, these things that I was showing before were done using numerics. So here I can also get all these pictures analytically, so I can get a formula which will give me eventually this if I Fourier transform it. And just to mark where I'm getting these features from, I can show you these terms. So here is the term that is responsible for this middle peak that we're going to use for spin orbit coupling, and it's here again. We have also this cosine of 2p Fermi sigma for plus and minus, which are actually here, and they appear here as two rings. We have, outside of these brackets, we have cosine, which defines the symmetry, the twofold symmetry of my spin-polarized feature. We have the decay, This decay usually depends on dimensionality of the problem. So I can have, for example, in 1D, this will be absent at all. In 3D, it's given by 3 divided by 2, the coefficient here. So just to be consistent between analytics and numerics, everything is consistent. And the last thing I wanted to cover concerns the comparison to the metallic phase. So what we call a metallic phase, actually, if we take the same system and just set the superconducting pairing to zero, we will get a simple metal. So what we say is that, okay, we introduce a magnetic impurity into metal, and let's see whether we're having the same thing as in superconductor or not. And the answer is no, because a magnetic impurity in a metal does not create any impurity-induced states. So what happens actually when we introduce an impurity into a metal is that it affects all the whole band structure. So it adds some imaginary shifts everywhere, but it does not create any impurity-induced, like, for example, Shiba states that I've been showing you in the superconducting phase. And of course, the features will be much sharper in comparison with superconducting phase, but this middle feature is absent, the one that we propose to use to measure the spin-orbit coupling. So that is why this can be used in superconductors, but this cannot be used in metals when there is no superconductivity. And well, this brings me to my conclusions. The important thing is that the message is that we can use the spin-polarized local densities of states to measure directly the spin-orbit coupling for superconducting systems. And again, we suggest to use the spin-polarized STM. It is becoming more and more accessible, so it makes sense to use it to get all those features. Thanks for your attention. If you have some questions, I can try to answer.
Which material do you have in mind for these experiments?
Well, for materials, it's always a bit tricky, but, well, we could say that any 2D superconductor which has spin orbit, and usually they have spin orbit coupling, it can be used. So, I mean, I'm not giving any particular example, but yeah.
Okay, so let's thank the speaker again if there is no other questions.